best of the Kuru dynasty, without sacrifice, one can never live happily on this planet or in this life. What then of the next? Srila Prabhupada's purport. Whatever form of material existence one is in, one is invariably ignorant of his real situation. In other words, existence in the material world is due to the multiple reactions to our sinful lives. Ignorance is the cause of sinful life, and sinful life is the cause of one's dragging on in material existence. That's a great quote. The human form of life is the only loophole by which one may get out of this entanglement. The Vedas, therefore, give us a chance for escape by pointing out the paths of religion, economic comfort, regulated sense gratification, and at last, the means to get out of the miserable condition entirely. The path of religion, or the different kinds of sacrifices recommended above, automatically solves our economic problems. By performance of jagya, we can have enough food, enough milk, etc., even if there is a so-called increase of population. When the body is fully supplied, naturally the next stage is to satisfy the senses. The Vedas prescribe, therefore, sacred marriage for regulated sense gratification. Thereby one is gradually elevated to the platform of release from material bondage, and the highest perfection of liberated life is to associate with the Supreme Lord. Perfection is achieved by performance of jagya, or sacrifice, as described above. Now, if a person is not inclined to perform jagya according to the Vedas, how can he expect a happy life? There are different grades of material comforts in different heavenly planets, and in all cases there is immense happiness for persons engaged in different kinds of jagya. But the highest kind of happiness that a man can achieve is to be promoted to the spiritual planets by practice of Krishna consciousness. A life of Krishna consciousness is therefore the solution to all the problems of material existence. Okay, the verse again. O best of the Kuru dynasty, without sacrifice one can never live happily on this planet or in this life. What then of the next? So this chapter and chapter 3, Om Gyantara Mandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Urmilitamyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my most humble and respectful obeisances to him. So, both the third and the fourth chapters have extensive explanations of jagya. And it's the way things are set up, you know, with the demigods and the human section. And even this material world, if one wants to be happy, one has to perform jagya. And then, if one doesn't, then he's going to be miserable. There's going to be some problems. So let's get into the purport here. Srila Prabhupada starts his purport. He says something very powerful here. Whatever form of material existence one is invariably ignorant of his real situation. In other words, existence in the material world is due to the multiple reactions of our sinful lives. So, I heard one sannyasi give a talk recently, and his terminology for this is acquired prejudices. If someone doesn't have the reference of Guru Sadhu Shastra, doesn't have this vision, Shastric vision, it's mainly their lives are just built around some mental concoction. So according to our actions and reactions from lives together, we've collected prejudices. We see things in a distorted way because we have all these experiences that have caused us sometimes to have unfounded fears. Or, you know, I mean, just imagine in a past life, if we've gone through a number of species, there's a very good possibility that at some point we were eaten alive. What a lovely thought. Anyway, so it's not uncommon for people to be fearful. There's a lot of fear now, and governments are playing on this fear. So then Prabhupada says, ignorance is the cause of simple life, and simple life is the cause of one's dragging on in material existence. That is a lot in a few words. Some people, they like to say something like money is the root of all evil. Of course, that's one of the residences of Kali. You know, his influence is strong where gold or money is hoarded. But to be more accurate, ignorance is the root of all evil, because if we're misidentifying with the body and the material sense objects, we're condemning ourselves to suffer, not only in this life, but in life after life after life. So how, you know, that's very unfortunate. So we have to come out of this ignorance. In the last chapter, Arjuna asked the question of the millennium. He says, O descendant of Vrishni, by what is one impelled to sinful acts, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force? And then the Lord's answer is, it is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material modes of passion, and later transformed into wrath, and which is the all-devouring simple enemy of this world. So passion is the driving mode. You know, ignorance is sort of inert. But if passion gets mixed with ignorance, very bad combination. And Prabhupada says in the purport to this verse, if when lust is unsatisfied, it turns into wrath. And you can't become satisfied by scratching an itch. You know, many of our mothers have told us, Johnny, don't scratch that. You know, it's just going to get worse. And that's the case. So if there's no satiating desire, it's like scratching an itch, and it just gets worse. So what happens when we don't feel satisfied and we're trying like crazy to become satisfied with our material senses, then we get angry, and then we start to, you know, we have this distorted view again. You know, wrath is transformed into illusion, and an illusion continues our material existence. And there's a verse like that: by contemplating objects of the senses, one develops attachment, and by that attachment, anybody want to complete that? You got everybody muted? Ramananda. Famous verse. You remember that?
By contemplating the object of the senses, one develops attachment. By attachment, one develops lust, and by lust creates anger. From anger comes delusion. And from delusion, one falls down, or there's loss of intelligence, and one falls into the material pool. But I don't know the Sanskrit for it.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. Anyway, you know me. I'm mostly into the English. I'm not a. I don't have the 20 gigabytes of memory that Pushkar has. But anyway, I like to keep it simple. But it works in India really well. You know, they expect people to chant Sanskrit in India. If you're going to be, you're going to teach in India, you want to be quoting verses. And it does add some authority, even in the West, but I find my audience usually isn't, you know, I don't need to hit the verses too much in Sanskrit. So, lust is the greatest enemy of the living entity, but, and that's what induces the pure soul to remain entangled in this material world. Even the Buddhists, they have a saying, desire means suffering. You know, it's just this, even they recognize this. So, Prabhupada continues his purport, the human form of life is the only loophole by which one may get out of this entanglement. It's interesting. So we're, you know, of course there's 400,000 human forms, and that includes devas, and includes, you know, the sages and the heavenly planets, but it's the only, but actually the earth planet has some special significance here. It's usually, this is the place that people resolve their issues, is here on the earth planet, because in the heavenly planets the lives are extended for, you know, so long. But it's not that in the heavenly planets they can't finish their journey, but it's kind of like the long way home. Here, especially in Kali Yuga, you have this short life. So Prabhupada says, get serious and, you know, take advantage of what you've been given and wrap it up. You don't want to linger in this world. So then Prabhupada talks about Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, but he doesn't mention the Sanskrit. But he goes through the progression. The Vedas therefore give us a chance for escape by pointing out the paths of religion, economic development, regulated sense gratification, and at last, the means to get out of the material, the miserable condition entirely. So he's calling the path of religion different types of sacrifice recommended above. In the verses in the fourth chapter, they're mentioning different types of sacrifice for different types of persons, you know, so the yogis and the impersonalists and the, you know, so there's different types of sacrifices. And sacrifice in this world automatically solves economic problems. That's interesting, where Prabhupada says that by performance of yajna, we can have enough food, enough milk, everything, even if there's a so-called increase of population. Actually, the scarcity is artificially produced. We've probably heard that in some classes, that the industrialists or the capitalists, they're not distributing things properly. You know, they're only interested in profit. And also there's a lot of conflict, you know, in Africa and other places where life is so disturbed that people can't even grow food, you know, and even warring factions destroy the crops of the other people, you know, the people they're having a conflict with. So it's a very difficult age. Then, anyway, Krishna says towards the beginning of the third chapter, In the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods, along with sacrifices for Vishnu, and blessed him by saying, "Be thou happy by this yajna, because its performance will bestow upon you all desirable things." And then the next verse, 11, "The demigods, being pleased by sacrifices, will also please you. Thus nourishing one another, there will reign general prosperity for all." So the demigod worship, or the demigod sacrifice, is at least someone's recognizing that, you know, they're being supplied air, light, water, and other things for maintaining the body and the soul. So they're recognizing that. Because if you don't recognize that, you're a thief. But ultimately, the sacrifices are meant for Vishnu. So, and the demigods are just assistants. They're actually different parts of the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, indirectly, you know, they're just they're performing services for the Supreme Lord. And it depends on the sacrifice, the system of sacrifice, and the necessities of life are taken care of if one lives such a system of sacrifice. So then Prabhupada says, when the body is fully supplied, naturally the next stage is to satisfy the senses. So he used the word economic comfort. These days people acquire a lot more wealth than they need, than they can even spend, and then they end up giving in charity, but these people are blind. They don't know who to give charity to. You know, and anyway, the Vedas prescribe, therefore, sacred marriage for the regulated sense gratification once one is economically situated. So the whole Vedic system is based on regulation. And I heard Prabhupada say, you can even be a religious meat eater, but you have to follow the system of sacrificing a goat, you know, at a certain time. You have to build an altar. You have to, it's not any day you can do it. It's on the full moon day, and then it's offered to the goddess Kali. So you can even be a religious meat eater. But, and the Vedas, a lot of times, are meant for elevating people out of their bad habits. So marriage is meant to regulate society. And we've seen when the system breaks down, there's chaos. And, you know, if you follow the news, you know, women leaving men leaving women. Sometimes, you know, there's restraining orders, and sometimes there's some news that someone's been hurt or even killed by the other party. And so we've seen unrestricted sense gratification often ends up in intoxication and early deaths. And when we were growing up in the 60s, Jim Morrison died of a heroin overdose, Janis Joplin, similar, Jimi Hendrix, similar, and there were others. And these people, they had lots of money, fame, sex, whatever. And they finally ended their miserable lives with some form of intoxication. Sad. So, but it's an example of how, if someone doesn't live a regulated life, if they're just, I guess the term developed over the years, party animal, they're headed for trouble, you know. And most likely, you know, if it's just about feeling good, they don't stop at anything, and usually it ends up in some heavy kind of drugs to feel good, because they've burned out their senses. So human life is meant to be regulated, and that means restraint, sacrifice. And if one follows the Vedic system, there'll be gradual elevation towards liberation. And Srila Prabhupada expresses it in this purport in this way: thereby one is gradually elevated to the platform of release from material bondage, and the highest perfection of liberated life is to associate with the Supreme Lord. So that's, Prabhupada kind of snuck that in there. It's actually Artakam, what's it, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. And then the fifth goal of life is prema. You know, that so that he kind of slipped that one in. So perfection is achieved by performance of jagya, as described above. Then he says, now if a person is not inclined to perform jagya according to the Vedas, how can he expect a happy life? Because it'll just be disturbed. There's a verse, I can't remember the whole verse, but, you know, if there's no peace, what's the question of happiness? You know, if somebody doesn't control their senses and mind, they can't have peace. And if if you're not peaceful, if you're not in the mode of goodness, what's the question of happiness? So there are different grades, Prabhupada says, of material comforts in different heavenly planets, and in all cases there is immense happiness for persons engaged in different kinds of jagya. And so it sounds like the mode of goodness, you know, jagya elevates one to the mode of goodness where one can experience some happiness. The Varnashram system is also a gradual system of sacrifice. Sacrifice, many sacrifices in the Vedas lead to the heavenly planets, and the Christians and the Muslims, they're famous for wanting to go to heaven, and they're willing to perform sacrifices towards that end. Bali Maharaj, he was famous for performing sacrifices and giving in charity, which opened the door for Vamanadeva to take everything back for the demigods. And everyone, really, everyone performs sacrifices, even the materialists. They sacrifice for material enjoyment. And personalists sacrifice their individuality to merge into Brahman. Yogis perform sacrifices for mystic powers or to realize the Supersoul. And the devotees, they sacrifice themselves by following the regulative principles and engaging in devotional service, which is not, which is the recommended path in Kali Yuga. And then Prabhupada says, but the highest kind of happiness that a man can achieve is to be promoted to the spiritual planets by practice of Krishna consciousness. A life of Krishna consciousness is therefore the solution to all problems of material existence. There's a verse that I really like in the last chapter, the third chapter, 15th verse. Regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas, and the Vedas are directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And here's the kicker. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. And Gopur Vrindapal, we were talking about this verse, and he said, just where you don't want it, right? Meaning, most people, they're not inclined in this age because there's so much propaganda to try to enjoy yourself on the material plane. The sacrifice to get transcendence, you have to perform acts of sacrifice. So this morning I found these verses in 9th chapter of the 2nd canto, and they harmonize with this verse in purport. So I would like to read through them again. It was after Brahma had performed his penance for 100 celestial years, and the Lord was expressing his pleasure for Brahma's penances. It says, O Brahma, impregnated with the Vedas, I am very much pleased with your long accumulated penance with the desire for creation. I wish you good luck, O Brahma. You may ask from me, the giver of all benedictions, all that you may desire. You may know that the ultimate benediction as the result of all penances is to see me by realization. 22. This is 922. The highest perfection is the personal perception of my abodes, and this has been possible because of your submissive attitude in the performance of severe penance according to my order. O sinless Brahma, you may know from me that it was I who first ordered you to undergo penance, and when you were perplexed in your duty, such penance is in my heart and soul, and therefore penance and I are non-different. I create this cosmos by such penance. I maintain it by the same energy, and I withdraw it by this all by the same energy. Therefore, the potency is penance only. This personality Godhead said, knowledge about me as described in the scriptures is very confidential, and it has to be realized in conjunction with devotional service. The necessary paraphernalia for that process is explained by me. You may take it up carefully. You may now take it up carefully. So, there's no way around it. Prabhupada, he would say sometimes, the human form of life is meant for tapasya. And maybe a more positive way of saying it is simple thinking, simple living and high thinking. So we shouldn't be afraid of austerity. You know, we have the opportunity to fast on special days and, you know, Ekadasi and appearance days of the Lord and Guru. And, you know, we should embrace this sort of thing. But we don't have to get overdone. We've already been given, you know, the four regulative principles. That's a jugya, to follow that. The, you know, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, and no gambling. That's our, you know, that's the austerities we've been given by Prabhupada. And I guess in the beginning, the chanting is also an austerity. There's austerity of speech. You know, you want to control your speech. You don't want to talk too much. You don't want to say bad things. But there's plenty of austerities if one wants to engage in those. But you don't. We don't have to, but the main austerity is to surrender. That's the big one, to perform that austerity. So we want to give everything for the satisfaction of Krishna. And that's our sacrifice. We're sacrificing ourselves for Krishna. We want his pleasure, not our own. And that was been in a... It comes up again and again, Giri Govardhan's class. You know, the Brahmins are like that. They find their happiness in other people's happiness, not their own. So we've been given a very simple process for chanting the Lord's holy names, and these names have the full potency to reveal the Lord's form, qualities, pastimes to anyone who chants them. And there's no need to be a big pundit, although if somebody has some brain power, they should use it in Krishna's service. But we should all hear Hari Katha in the form of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and other related scriptures, associate with elevated devotees, chant the holy names, and dedicate our mind, words, and actions to Krishna. And if we make some effort in this, you know, in doing these things, Krishna will send all the help we will need. You know, I should know that verse. I carry what they lack.
Yogik Shema Bahamiham.
Go ahead. What's the English?
I carry what they have and I preserve what they lack.
Yeah, so we're protected. If we make a sincere effort, you know, Bodhayan Maharaj, you know, your birthday comes up on Skype or something, and then you get people, you know, somehow if you entered in your personal information, your birthday, then people wish you a happy birthday. So the way he did it was he said that he's praying to Lord Nisringadev to protect me, you know, as long as there's sufficient chanting going on. There's some condition to it. But that's good. You know, I liked it. You know, that's someone, you know, he's extending himself like that. And so Krishna himself, he'll send his representative, he'll send, you know, so many people to help us along the way so that, you know, we can complete our journey, you know, back home, back to Godhead. We just have to put out a little effort, that's all. So that's about it for today.
Well, I was only going to say one little thing, and that was, what? You see the Sanskrit line?
Where sure.
Somewhere or other, I read it as agyasya, but it's yagyasya.
Right.
So, this is more the translation here for one who performs no sacrifice. Yagyasya. Of yagya, none.
It's a literal translation. I understand that. You know, yagna's in there, and you put the A before it, so there's no yagna, and then there's the person that performs no yagna. No, I understand that. You know, there's the spirit and the literal. There's the lyrical and there's the literal. I tend to go with the spirit. Like, I don't think it's totally incorrect, the foolish. You know, those that don't perform sacrifice, but yeah, I mean, both of them kind of work.
Yeah, and don't get into looking up online what the original thing was and why it was changed. But it would seem like this is in context, though, because Krishna is talking about all these different types of sacrifices, and now he's ending by saying that one who doesn't do any sacrifice, he just can't be happy. Now we're...
Correct. Correct. Yeah.
That was inspiring what you read, how... Everyone has to perform austerities and penances. I like that you clarified, you know, what our penances are.
Yeah, even the Lord, that's the system of the creation. I mean, he's engaged. He's by showing that his potency is penance. They're related. There's some power connected with that penance. And Brahma, after 100 celestial years, suddenly, you know, he's able to recreate the entire cosmic manifestation, which is very powerful.
I like how you pointed out that some of the austerities or penances is that the austerities of speech, which is speaking truthfully, beneficially, avoiding speech that offends, and reciting the Vedas regularly. I was just listening to a lecture today. One sannyasi was giving a wonderful lecture, pointing out that the power of our speech is in truthfulness. The more
right.
we're truthful, then you know you can say the same thing, but somebody is truthful. Then it really affects people. You know, if we're a hypocrite, you know, we can speak all kinds of philosophy, but it's not really going to affect anybody. But somebody who's simple, maybe, but still, he's speaking the truth. And what it means, and Alfie was pointing out, when to talk, speaking the truth, it means not just not being a mundane, truthful person, but speaking the absolute truth. And then you have some real potency. And just one other thing, this was interesting. I never heard this before. Does anybody else here know what mlecha means? First time I heard.
Yeah. It means someone who doesn't follow Vedic principles.
What did Candita say?
Go ahead, Candita.
I was told it means a dog eater.
That's a swapacha. Anyway, this is the first time I heard this. Mlecha means one who cannot pronounce the Vedic sounds properly. They just mumble, blah, 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 blah. Because in Vedic culture, you're only supposed to teach those who are qualified how to chant the Vedic mantras. And it was interesting because he was pointing out that in the system of Nyaya, of logic, it's one of the schools, and six of those of the different branches of Nyaya all have to do with grammar. It includes stuff like meter and correct pronunciation and etc. So to chant the Vedic mantras properly. I know I'm taking up some time here, but anyway, just a really interesting lecture. It was Bhakti Vigyan Swami. It was great. Anyway, he mentioned that there was one Swedish scientist at the beginning of the last century. He figured out a way to take a sound vibration and I can't remember his name. Anyway, our sannyasi, right? We speak on Fridays. He pointed out that if you can have electrical impulses that are put into a certain machine, it vibrates different frequencies. And if you put water or sand, when it vibrates, it makes like different shapes. So when they recorded voices of people, speaking like English words, it just, you say something like dog or cat or something like that. It doesn't produce anything that you can discern. But then he got this Swedish scientist was able to get some Sanskritists from India. They were really trained up. When they spoke Sanskrit words, it created Sanskrit letters. So when they spoke, a certain frequency, it created a Sanskrit letter in the sand. So
in the sand?
Yeah.
In the sand. Yeah, there's some websites that have this sort of thing where they have different frequencies and it creates mandalas. You saw that, right?
Yes, I saw the mandalas. But this was, he was saying that, when they, like you say, ha, re, ra, ma, it would actually produce the Sanskrit Devanagari.
In the sand?
That's what he said.
There's a lot of mystical things. I mean, when I was listening to some part of your explanation about the truth, Sringi, 13-year-old Brahmin boy, because he never deviated from the truth, he was trained up from birth by his father to always speak the truth, he was able to create a future event and even created a creature to execute the king. So, when he cursed Pariket, he cursed him, he even created a creature to bite him.
Wow.
So, there's some power. If somebody's only, with Gandhari, her austerities, she joined her husband in her blindness and she was going to make Duryodhan's body like steel. She was going to benedict him like that. There's these austerities of speech and these austerities that you're wielding power when you do them purely. So, there's a lot of mysticism that has gone the wayside. That's why, these yajnas are not generally perform. Anyway, You gonna get that, Rod, or no? Okay.
Oh, right.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that that's, you know, it's nice to document stuff like that. You know, you hear about it, and then somebody should have some video of it or something. You know, that would be something to post on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
That would blow minds.
Yeah, that's
neat. There's some Australian brothers that did a film called what is it? Ring of Fire. It was these Indonesian volcanoes that are like in a ring, and they had some footage of this guy in Indonesia that had his chi. He could throw chi like in martial artists. They can. You know, they can throw their chi without even touching you. You know that you'll feel it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this anyway. This guy he crumpled up some paper and he started to, you know, put his hand out and it was like over the paper and he actually set it on fire.
Mm.
And they had it. You know, they had the cameras because they were shooting a movie at the time. It's kind of interesting. I guess Gaur Keshava has a trick where he starts the fire with something.
Oh, yeah. Not exactly the same.
Not exactly the same, right. But there's things still, you know, there's some people that have some power that's uncommon. You know, you don't see it a lot. But if somebody's got something like that, they should you should write to that Swami and tell him, see if you can get them to, you know, record it, put it up on the internet.
Yeah,
that would be really cool.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Prabhu. Always
okay.
A great class.
Okay, no, it's happy. Hari Bol.
Hare Krishna. Hare
Krishna. Hare Krishna. All glories to Prabhupada.
Haribo. Okay.